BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
Hello, this is Adam.
It's Joe.
Oh my goodness.
God, that was over the top, wasn't
We're
it?
Reaching.
I was trying too
that
hard.
Was good though. Your one was good. Yeah, I was into
I think
it this
you're
week.
You're just trying to.
No, because it was half like a gorilla and half like one of those Brazilian instruments that
it
goes.
Was a, well, it was a gorilla who'd swallowed one of those instruments.
So listen, folks, let's not waste any time. We don't want to take up valuable.
Well, my gorilla story wasn't wasting time. It was amazing.
Was it?
Yeah. You're never going to hear it now.
It's over now. We've got to get into the podcast, right? The less time we spend rambling at the top here, the more we can do for Retro Tech.
Got to obey the percentage rules.
Otherwise, all kinds of bad things happen.
Enjoy the podcast. Here it is.
Here it is. Here it is. Quick.
Quickly.
Now.
This is a big British castle podcast with some talking from the Adam and Joshua radiogram. You can listen to it while you're on your way to work. And when you get there, you can listen on the loo. How do you do?
Last week, listeners, after the show, I, Joe Cornish, left the studio and there was a mother and a daughter standing outside the studio. Not immediately outside the doors.
And a son.
And I didn't see the son.
Yeah, he was little, but he was there.
Ah. They were standing there, and as I left, they shouted, "Stephen!" So I shouted, "Coming!" and waved.
Ah, well done.
And then when we came in this morning, those very people have sent a beautiful glittery card. Their names are Chloe, Peter and Anne. Chloe's 10, Peter's 7. And the mum, it's wrong to say a lady's age, isn't it? But she's a lovely lady. And they've sent in a very nice card saying that... I'm assuming she's a lovely lady.
Yeah, she was.
Do you think she isn't?
No, she was definitely...
Okay, you just laughed. I thought maybe...
No, I was laughing at the idea that it's... You think it's wrong to say a lady's age.
It is! That's one of the oldest rules in the man chivalry book, surely.
Just makes me chuckle when it comes out of your locker, though.
Why?
I don't know, because I don't associate you with
I've
man
got a
chivalry.
Very, very chivalrous locker.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, so... Wow, you've confused me
I'm sorry, I derailed. You.
You've derailed me.
Well, they were a very nice family.
They were very nice, but they've sent in a card, right?
Mm.
They say it was so nice to meet Adam. We were so glad to meet Adam. We waited for ages. Blah, blah, blah. Well done, Joe, for responding. You aren't moody like Adam says.
I've never called you moody.
You told them I was moody.
No.
I'm imagining the conversation now. Oh, Adam, you're brilliant. Joe said coming, but then he walked away. And Chloe, Peter and Mum, Anne, I walked away because I'm so humble.
Yeah.
I just didn't think they were there for us. I thought they were maybe waiting for someone else.
Right.
And just happened to pop in a casual passing Stephen.
Oh.
To go over to them and go, "Hi, how you doing?" Like Adam did. Would have been so arrogant.
Hi, fans. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, fans? What do you want? Autograph, a chat? Maybe you want me to sit down and have a cup of tea with
you? Hey, don't crowd me, all right? Hey, get that little boy away from me.
That's what was happening in Adam's brain, whereas my brain was going, oh. I don't know.
Security, what the hell's this little boy doing? Get him away from me, for Christ's sake.
That's what you would have done. You would have started holding on to them and struggling with them and shouting, "Get off me, get off me."
Look, I've just done a 3-hour radio show. You think I've got better things to do than to talk to people in the street?
So I wanted to make it clear to Chloe, Peter and Anne that it was purely my humility that kept me from assuming that you were there to see me. And what an extraordinary display of Adam's out-of-control arrogance.
that I would hang around and chat.
Driven by a blast of ego across the pavement.
No, it was genuinely really nice to meet you, chaps.
It was.
Text the nation. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
And Text the Nation this week, listeners, we gave you a little bit of early warning about it last week, is going to be gig etiquette. Adam and I are both keen live music attendees, aren't we? Is that fair to say?
I'm keen when I've got the chance. I haven't been to a gig for a long time.
No. We go to gigs a lot.
We go to gigs all the time.
We go to gigs all the time. We love them.
Yeah.
And we've got strong opinions on how people should behave at them.
Absolutely.
So we're looking to draw up a sort of a manifesto for behaviour at live gigs.
And this is also things that would improve the experience of seeing live music, right?
We want 10 bullet points. I'm not asking you to send in 10 bullet points. You only have to send in your suggestions for one of the bullet points.
Yeah.
But at the end of the show, we want to end up with a 10-point manifesto for behaviour at gigs. And what's going to happen is this manifesto will be taken around to all live venues by a jackbooted police force in black jumpsuits, white motorcycle helmets with electric prods.
Right.
Like in THX-1138. Oof. And it'll be enforced.
Yeah.
Whilst making life scarier, it'll also improve the behaviour and people's enjoyment of gigs.
We could get the pigeon detectives to enforce it. I imagine it's the kind of thing they would enjoy.
You think so?
Yeah, they're rough boys.
Really?
And they love live music.
You sound excited by that.
I am a little bit.
Here are some ideas. Idea number one, audiences at gigs should be positioned in height order.
That's brilliant.
Now, as a tall man, I'm being sacrificial here because obviously I would be relegated to the back.
Yeah, but you'd still be able to see, wouldn't you?
Well,
that's
exactly.
The main thing.
I think when you buy your ticket, you have to give them your measurements.
Yeah.
Or maybe it would be included in your new government chipped ID card when the, you know, THX style state begins. We'd all have chipped ID cards.
Yeah.
But when you buy your ticket, you have to tell them your height, and then you get allocated a special area of the auditorium where you won't be obscuring the view of the person standing behind.
And would you do? Would you be super strict about it? I was thinking, what about just having an enclosure?
Couples would be split up. If there's a small lady who goes out with a tall woman,
right?
You know, say what you need
really?
To say, then you won't see them till the end of the gig.
That seems extreme.
Well, but it's for the greater good.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
What about just having an enclosure for short people that's
well,
voluntary?
Well, that's a better idea.
And
with
so,
some straw.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to have straw in the enclosure. But you could.
And an electric fence.
No. Just an enclosure where the short people can stand if they want that's near the stage, but you have to be short. You're not allowed in if you're tall.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
That's quite a good idea.
So it's voluntary. But I agree with you that some legislation needs to be put down about height.
Number two, idea number two, for bands below a certain decibel, okay, all bands are given a decibel rating.
Right.
The volume at which they play.
Fleet Foxes would be a good example of a quiet band.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For bands below a certain decibel, there is silence enforced during songs, okay? No loud singing along. I paid to hear the Fleet Foxes, not Kev from Teddington, singing along to the Fleet Foxes right next to me, you know?
Right.
So that's another thing, a decibel rating. And so for metal bands and rock bands where the music's so loud that you can't hear the person next to you singing along, that's fine. But if it's a quiet gig or a jazz gig or the Fleet Foxes, enforced silence.
And what about if some of the music is loud and some is quiet?
Well, those bands aren't allowed to play.
Because they're too inconsistent.
Yeah, they're too inconsistent. Bands, that's something bands have to do. They have to meet us halfway. They have to have a consistent volume. Maybe some sort of a light above the stage that tells people whether talking is allowed.
That's a good idea, yeah. I was thinking, actually this was suggested by someone else in the studio last week, I can't remember who. Maybe it was Liz Kershaw's producer. But it was the notion that fridges, beer fridges, should be switched on and kept switched on until the very end of the gig.
Right.
That's sometimes not
the case.
What's
the problem there?
Well, they switch them off or
they sort of shut the bars before the gig ends.
Well, they don't coordinate the chilling of the beers properly at all. Sometimes you get all disgusting warm beer. I mean, it's not a problem if you've got draft beer, I suppose. But
so you're saying that cold beer should be available all the way through the gig?
Yeah, very cold beer, ice buckets of beer in some fashion, or just fridges that actually work.
Another of my ideas is to serve beer with lids on.
Yeah.
So you don't get it spilt all over you the whole time.
Right, like little coffees.
Yeah, whose idea was it to have hundreds of people crammed tightly together and then fill, you know, squeezy, fragile plastic cups to the brim with beer? It's like some ridiculous, it's a knockout game or something.
Yes, exactly.
Trying to shove through all the people you got 2 inches of beer left. Never mind.
That's right. That's a very good idea.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And straws, maybe. You can have straws that would get people drunk too fast, right?
Yes, that's true.
But you could have little, you know, like you say, coffee shop sippy cups.
Yeah.
Sippy cup caps.
Or patches.
Patches?
Can you do patches for alcohol?
What do you mean patches?
like nicotine patches, you know what I mean?
Instead of actually having fluid?
Yeah. I haven't thought that one through.
No, you haven't.
No.
I thought you just meant nice patches with patterns on them.
No. Yeah,
it's Adam and Joe. We were born on the street. That's what this podcast is basically about. Various different kinds of streets. Streets where you do your shopping. The streets inside your mind. Streets where you're looking for a penny. But in the end, it's a turd that you find.
We often get a lot of eggcorns sent into us because it's something that we've talked about previously on this programme. And there was a couple that made me chuckle that came in this week. Just to remind you, an eggcorn is a misheard word or phrase, right? It comes from the fact that mishear the word acorn, you might think that it was the word eggcorn, right? So in a similar vein, well, here's some examples that'll make you understand if you don't already. This is from Johnny X. Brackets,
Johnny X.
Will Baxter. And he says, in fact, I think he's the Johnny X ages ago that sent something in that he suggested...
If you're going to call yourself Johnny X, don't put...
Well, no, we called him Johnny
name.
X because I think Will Baxter ages ago suggested a blow dry clip, the clip of the bad accent.
Oh, yes.
Which we played.
With
and we've
Josh Hartnett.
Yeah, and we forgot what his name was. We called him Johnny X.
There we go.
So it's Will
Baxter.
Giving
him a cool new name.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, Will says, my friend just told me that he was going to Portugal for some rest bite. I didn't know how relaxing
that's
that would
good.
Be.
That's good. That's like rest is a delicious snack.
Yeah.
And he's having a little bite of it.
So he means rest bite, obviously. And yeah, rest bite. Hmm. And here's another one from Nick. And he says, hi, Adam and Joe, I've got an eggcorn for you. It came from one of my colleagues who often comes out with things like this. On this occasion, we all fell about laughing and made little effort to hide our amusement. He, for he shall remain nameless, said about one of our workmates, he's the vein of my life. The vein of my life.
That would mean he is your lifeblood, wouldn't it?
Yes.
It would mean he is, I'm saving you here. It would mean that his mere presence is like your jugular, providing your essence, essential.
It's nice that you stepped in after that
Thanks.
Laugh. That
now
did.
I'm struggling.
After the laugh, that after I said, he's the vein of my life, your laugh was...
You know, that I've had that idea, actually, to go through our podcast and pick out the most insincere laughs. Because there are sometimes some very insincere laughs. There's laughs when you're just trying to support your co-broadcaster, you know? Just
yeah,
keep
I
things
do.
Ticking over.
I do know.
But there's clearly no actual amusement behind the laugh.
Yeah. Dead laughter.
Yeah. Do me a laugh now. Do your most convincing laugh now.
My most convincing one?
Yeah.
Well, I could really go over the top, or just a regular one.
It's got to be convincing. I've got to think. Was that it?
Yeah.
That was quite good. You see, I'm convinced by that one.
Right.
I don't think I'm as good as you.
No, well, I have to use my fake laugh on
How about
you
that?
A lot.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did.
Was
sounded
that convincing?
Very insincere. Very insincere.
Insincere. Yeah. Mm. What did you say? You have to use your fake laugh a lot.
A lot. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because some of the stuff you say is so lame.
How wooed.
There you go. That was a real one. But this one... that's not... I went wrong. This is absolute rubbish. What are we talking about?
Fake laughter.
Fake
it's an
laughter.
Important component of
What's the best... Can you do like a really over-the-top fake laugh? That doesn't sound real. That sounds silly.
Yeah, well, that's another technique. That's another technique folded into it, which is to get the person to leave.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah, you're really funny, but I'm hysterical.
Okay.
So go away.
How about this? Does that sound real?
It sounds like a kind of Victorian era laughing policeman.
Right. It's like a
sort of a BBC sound effects record. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Quite good though.
Yeah.
Didn't you think?
Yeah, I think you've got a fake laugh that goes, kind of like that. It has a high note
at
the end.
Oh, I know the one you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's laugh.
I know that's one of your fake ones.
That's laugh.
Like, it's so funny. It's just, 5F. I can't laugh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration because I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. But now my worries have disappeared. About.
Yes, it's time for Retro Text the Nation, listeners, our special podcast exclusive section where we give you the chance to contribute to last week's Text the Nation. Yeah, it's hard to get your head around, but it's fairly simple in execution, right?
And the subject for last week's
last week's
is new way I'm going to talk now. The subject of my last week was wee wee.
Yeah, and the one before. What? And all of them.
Why is it wee wee?
Because you said the subject of my last wee.
The subject of last week's assassination was crap collectibles, bits of pop cultural detritus that you have failed to throw away.
Worthless bits of pop culture based ephemera. And we had some brilliantly worthless stuff texted in. For instance, here's somebody who has a signed scooch photo.
Oh, that's
Sarah in Northants. I'm 16 years old. 7 years ago, my brother was at a school that had a visit from the atrocious band Scooch. He thought I'd really like a signed photo of the band. Even back then, I knew they were awful. But to make my brother feel good, I made a big show of how good I thought it was. Later that night, because I didn't really want to keep it, but I didn't want to throw it away and hurt my brother's feelings, I hatched a plan. I got a glass of blackcurrant and spilt it on the Scooch photo, making a big show of how upset I was.
Wow.
So she had to, like, perform a weird ritualized Scooch destruction program in order not to start to upset her brother.
Here's one from Martin Dugdale, and he says, with regard to your textination, I once got slapped in the face by the plectrum of the bassist from Damage Plan. Have you ever heard of Damage Plan?
No.
Their guitarist, Dimebag Darrell...
Was that his Damage Plan, though?
I'm going to throw a plectrum at someone's face. I'm going to cause a lot of damage with my plectrum.
Their guitarist, he says, Dimebag Darrell, was shot dead on stage about a month later. It's still probably worthless, though, the plectrum he's talking about, I think, not the fact that Dimebag Darrell was shot dead on stage.
That's not a laughing matter. That's very, not. Very sad. And how dare you bring it up?
I'm sorry. That was Martin's fault. Anyway, I love the show, he says. Keep it up.
Poor Martin, thrown right back in his face. Here's one from Paul, who says, there used to be a Collectibles show in Basildon at which reasonably famous actors from TV shows such as Babylon 5, Star Trek and Red Dwarf used to appear to sign autographs. I was at one, talking to Norman Lovett. Yeah, do you know who he is?
Yeah, sure, he's a comedian.
When Craig Parker, do you know who he is?
Don't know Parker.
He's Haldir in Lord of the Rings.
Oh.
He was standing next to Norman Lovett and offered our author, Paul, a bag of sweets. He also offered one to me. I ate the sweet but kept the wrapper, making a joke to my friends about putting it on eBay. I still have it. This was 6 or 7 years ago in a little plastic bag. It's worthless. There's no way I could ever prove it has any sort of vague Lord of the Rings connection. A sweet wrapper from a sweet given to him by Craig Parker, Haldir in the Lord of the Rings. How debased can you get?
That is absolutely pathetic. Okay, well, here's one right now, which is a story about not getting something and almost getting one, inspired by the fact that I was talking about the frustration you feel sometimes when people lob things into the audience, right?
Mm.
And there's a little scrabble that breaks out for it. This is from Sean in Doncaster. He says, Dear Adam and Joe, upon listening to last week's show and the conversation about fighting at gigs for item of pop cultural value, I felt compelled to tell you a story about my dad and one such item that would have been of great value if he had managed to get his hands on it. In their youth, my parents, in particular my mum, were big fans of T-Rex and were lucky enough to have the chance to see said band in concert, a fact that I'm jealous of to this day. During the gig, the legendary figure of Mark Bolan threw his tambourine that he had been playing throughout the concert into the enthralled crowd and straight in the direction of my dad, who reached out to catch the glam trinket as it sailed towards him. Upon plucking the tambourine out of the air, a woman who was in the vicinity of my dad proceeded to bite down on his hand, and he was unable to take the pain, so he had to let go and submit the item to the rabid cowbag, is how Sean describes her. Finally, as if this wasn't bad enough, it turned out that it was the last gig Mark Bolan would ever play, as his tragic death occurred very soon after that. Absolutely gutted, says Sean from Doncaster.
That is hideous behaviour.
Biting down on the guy's hand until he lets go of Mark Bolan's tambourine. That is no good, is it?
What a rabid cowbag.
What an absolute rabid cowbag.
What an awful expression.
I wonder if she's around still. Do you think she's alive, the cowbag?
Yeah, she's probably very happy and rolling in cash from her
playing
Bolan
her tambourine,
booty.
That's right. Running around with flecks of spittle coming from her jaws.
Rabid cowbag.
Thanks very much indeed for all your texts and emails, and, you know, as usual, sincere apologies if we haven't had time to read them out.
Yeah, now back to the Plopcast.
Here we go.
It's time for Song Wars, the war of the songs. A couple of tunes by a couple of prongs. Which will you vote for? Which one is the best? We're putting our songs to the listener test.
So check it out. It's time for Song Wars. And if you're a new listener, this is the part of the show where Adam and I go away. There's more to it. Don't get excited. We're not going to leave. We go away and record songs based on a theme. And we do them entirely ourselves. using our laptops, and then we battle them. We're going to play you both songs, my song and Adam's song, and we invite you to vote for the one you like best via email. The email is adamandjoe.sixmusic@bbc.co.uk.
And next week we will announce which one has won and play that one, and it'll be like crowning the king of music.
And then neither song will ever be heard ever again by anybody ever.
No, that's true. Someone asked me if we were going to do a Song Wars Volume 2, because we did a Song Wars Volume 1 iTunes album, but there's no plans currently for Volume 2.
Well, we're going to release them in some way. We're going to figure that out.
Yeah.
But anyway, this week's theme was the ultimate 80s song.
Right.
Because we've observed that the 80s is all trendy again,
mm-hmm.
with acts like La Rue, and that's the only one I can think of at the moment.
Empire of the Sun.
Yeah, the kind of 80s thing is very much back in vogue. So we thought we might try and cash in
Black
on that.
Kids.
By writing the most sort of quintessentially 80s songs we could, right?
Yes, and the only stipulation we had was that it should feature a spoken word passage, right?
Yeah, exactly. We observed that as one of the tropes of 80s songs.
Yeah.
A little sort of spoken word bit by the singer. So I'm tossing a coin, heads or tails, Adam?
I call heads to go first.
It's tails.
You go first.
Okay, my track, listeners, is a kind of attempt to recreate Trevor Horn era ABC.
Oh, wow, that's ambitious.
I know, it's a bit overly ambitious. I was trying to, squeeze out of GarageBand Trevor Horn style... You know, and for younger listeners, Trevor Horn had a very sort of bombastic orchestral style.
Mm.
And the ABC album Lexicon of Love is probably the most extraordinary work out of that style. So I was trying to recreate that sound, and I was trying to do a Martin Fry impression. This is basically an ABC song.
Yeah.
And just to understand what's happening in this song, you've got to kind of think of Martin Fry, the lead singer of ABC. He's in his house or maybe in the studio, and he's singing one of his over-the-top 80s lush funk ballads when he's interrupted by his backing singer or girlfriend with some petty domestic concerns, and things go downhill from there.
Wow.
So this is just called Incredible Song. So here's song number one, Incredible Song.
When the world is like a huge potato, and it looks as though you've had your chips, you thought that you could trust the captain, now you're sailing on a sinking ship. Don't interrupt my vocals,
I can't find it,
it's under the stairs.
No, it isn't.
Won't you leave me alone when I'm singing this incredible song?
No one understands my 80s genius.
Or perhaps you're just a melodramatic ponce.
How dare you? I'm leaving. I can't stand your stupid face.
I won't cry when you're gone. I hate you and your songs.
I'm amazing. You are average.
Got your purpose.
It's just my style of singing.
No, it isn't.
You called me a ponce.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'll stay if you say that you love me and my incredible song.
Okay, I love you and your incredible song.
Good, because I'm hungry. Now make me mighty.
Wow.
There we go. That's just a glimpse into the domestic problems of an over-the-top 80s singer.
That is extraordinary. I mean,
thanks.
That's overwhelming. The thing is, that was sincere. You can actually sing. That's a thing that you have over me in the whole Song Wars thing. And so it
not
it means,
sure that that's true.
It means
you sung a very nice ballad for your lady wife on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it was a little histrionic. But anyway, for vocal stylings, you nailed Martin Fry. I mean,
that's very nice of you to say.
That was amazing.
You know, I have nailed Martin Fry.
Yeah, I'm sure. Mm. Everyone would like to in his gold lame pants. I went for someone whose vocal stylings I thought that I could approximate a little more easily. I went for Phil Oakey.
Ah, good choice.
But he's hard because he kind of sings quite low, so I thought it would be easy. But actually, it's difficult to make it sort of punch through the track. You know what I mean?
With Song Wars, when you start out on a song like that, you very seldom have time to stop and restart.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to you have to go the whole hog, don't you?
Yes.
The whole Lindsay hog.
But what I did, Phil Oakey is just one of the many vocal influences that is in my track.
The Oakey Vokeys?
Yeah. The Oakles. It's a mishmash of all kinds of different bits of the 80s in one track. In fact, I think maybe I've overloaded it. But I won't say any more. I'll just play you. This is just called 80s Song.
One thing that I really hate is how we are no longer in the 80s. I wish Doc Brown from Back to the Future could take me back there now in his DeLorean car.
I'm going back to the 80s, a decade of fun. You could make lots of cash and gender bend in the sun. You could dress like a ponce or a pirate from space and draw wavy lines on your face.
Margaret Thatcher,
shoulder pads,
New Kids on the Block,
fresh
body popping,
funny Eddie Murphy,
metal Mickey,
a day glow sock,
New York girls who dressed all slutty, boys from Camden who were
nothing,
the king of pop when he was black, Shack Attack.
I live in the 80s, my life is fantastic. I've got a giant flat made of money and plastic. I play Space Invaders, I drive a C5. What a great time to be alive.
This is a sample of James Brown.
Scratch, scratch, scratching, scratching.
I'm a sexy woman.
We had the Beastie Boys for tea. Their behaviour was disgraceful. They vomited on Adamant and Boy George got a faceful. Ad-Rock broke my Rubik's Cube and Mike D punched Rick Astley. MCA watched MTV. The whole thing was just ghastly.
The 80s were destroyed by the Beastie Boys. They were so rude and made a terrible noise. Why did they have to
shout
at the
end
of every
line?
Before them everything was fine. Oh, take me back today, it's horrible here. There's crappy 80s music, unemployment and fear. Oh wait, they had those then, of course I nearly forgot. In fact, things haven't changed a lot.
Wow, I like the one syndrome hit in the middle of that. Doink, boink, towards the beginning. That's very good. So there you go, listeners. Those are the two Song Wars songs this week. Song number one was Joe's song. Incredible song. Song number two was Adam's song. 80s song. Brilliant names there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The 80s song. And I noticed that we both used the word ponce as part of our lyrical
package.
Well, it's
one of the key 80s words.
It's the ultimate 80s word, isn't it?
One of the defining buzzwords.
It's the ponce decade.
It was when it was fine to be a ponce.
Right.
That's why we liked it so much.
It was encouraged.
Yeah, exactly. It was a good thing. And hey, hopefully those times are coming around again. Vote, please, by email, adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk. You can vote if you're listening again or listening on the podcast. You can vote any time up to close of business on Friday. They'll be counted next Saturday morning. It turns out, and I don't know why he didn't mention this, but Adam's 80s song had a sample of a lady saying, I'm a sexy lady.
I'm a sexy woman.
Turns out, and again, this might not mean much to you if you're not a regular listener. If you're not a regular listener, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But that was a sample of Sif, the Icelandic sexy supermodel.
That's right.
Who we've been engaged in a bizarre sort of exchange stroke ineffectual courtship with over the last few months. It turns out Adam's just dropped casually into the conversation that he telephoned her and spoke to her without saying anything to either Ben or I, who feel equal claim to Sif's affections. Adam has stepped out of all protocol, called her and recorded her voice for his song without mentioning it, and she's coming to see his gig on Friday.
Yeah, that's true.
What are you doing?
Well, the thing is that we got an... I'm not organised for this, you see. I can't... the reason I didn't mention it is before is because I recorded a lot more stuff with her that I was going to use in my track, the spoken word section. But my computer...
This is exactly what we were talking about Martin Fry calling up.
It's not the same, though, is it?
It's like a... Well, it's sexier.
Yeah, I guess.
Than Martin Fry calling.
It was all completely appropriate. There was no, like, flirtation on the phone or anything. It was completely businesslike.
Was.
No, she's above that, Sif. You know, she's very mature.
We better hope so.
But no, someone suggested that we get, like, someone emailed the show and said, why don't you get Sif on your 80s tracks? Then you'll be killing two birds with one stone, you know, because we were going to do an Icelandic song for Song
Yeah,
Wars.
But then I would have got her on my track as well.
Right.
I mean, I think we should still do the Icelandic song.
Sorry, do you think that was underhand?
I wasn't underhand. I'm just, I'm fine. I'm very happy about you and Sif. I'm not sure what your wife's going to think, but no, I'm happy about it. It would be exciting. I think Sif, there's a lot of potential with Sif. She's very talented.
Yeah. Why don't you come to my gig on Friday and you can meet her?
Maybe I will.
Yeah.
Yeah, there'll be a lot. You'll be busy setting up the show.
Maybe.
There'll be a lot of time for me and Sif to chat.
That's right.
Yeah, you won't have time. Especially when she sees us both in the flesh.
She's seen that. She's seen some stuff that we've done on YouTube recently where we're looking fairly ropey. So I think she understands.
No, but I look much better in the flesh. I'm not very photogenic. But when you actually see us in the flesh, it's like,
it's amazing.
Forget about Adam.
Yeah.
Look at Joe.
Look at that one.
Look at that big one up there. Sif, if you're listening, if Adam phones you up, then you've got to realise that you it's wrong to use the phrase belong to us, because that would be wrong. But you do, and to us both. So you can't just do things for Adam's song and then not tell me about it.
Right, right.
She's ours, not yours.
You are being creepy about it. I phoned her up in a very business-like way. It was all above board.
How can you get a woman to say, I'm a sexy woman, in a business-like way?
She's a model. That's what she does. That kind of thing. It's acting. It's just acting.
Text the nation. Text, text, text. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
And yes, we are rejoining Text the Nation, the theme of which this week is gig etiquette. Specifically, we are trying to compile a manifesto containing 10 points that will improve the gig-going experience for people all over the world.
Here's a couple more of mine. Making way for someone to move past you.
Yes.
You know, you're packed in a crowd and someone starts pushing past you, so you politely sort of create a space that wasn't there by pushing yourself really close to your partner or something to let the person step through.
Yeah.
And they step into that space and just stay there. Do you ever get that?
That's awful.
You've compressed yourself in an uncomfortable way to let them past, and they interpret that space as a space they can occupy.
Yeah, wrong.
Wrong. Bad. My number 9 was guys who take their shirts off and then start falling into people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the thinking there? There's always several people at every kind of gig who think it's amusing just to be out of control and fall over on everybody.
That's a young person's thing.
Is that slam dancing?
Maybe that's a little bit of slam dancing, Grandpa.
If you haven't realised, listeners, Text the Nation this week is all about gig behaviour. We're trying to build up a 10-point manifesto to improve live music.
I thought you were going to say, if you haven't realised, we're both very old.
That's a fake laugh. Oh, dear.
I think that's fair enough, though, isn't it? You can't stop people, exuberant
yes,
young
you
people, from
yes,
stripping off.
Yes, you can.
You can.
The police can. With the electric prods.
The pigeon detectives.
Exactly.
Right.
So here are some suggestions.
What's your problem with that? You just don't like being battled to by naked men?
Yeah, topless men falling into me.
Some people love that, though.
I don't know how to respond. Sorry, mate.
Caress them.
Caress them? Mm. That would freak them out.
Lick the sweat off them. That would stop them, at least.
Yeah.
Oh, what? Did you just lick me?
It might start them.
Yeah, maybe.
Who knows what could happen?
Well, you could go down an exciting new avenue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's one that I thought of, right? A point for the manifesto. Sometimes during a boring song, everyone will go to the lav at the same time. And you might get stage fright when you're all queued up at the urinal. This is more a man thing than a woman thing. And so you're all lined up at the urinal during the boring song. You get a bit of stage fright. And as you're straining to do your whistle wazzle, you get an airborne toxic event, right? And it's very humiliating and embarrassing. And so I was thinking what would be nice is if they just have very loud music playing in the lavs. I mean, you get that sometimes anyway. Mm. But a lot of the time at a venue, you'll go into the lav and there'll be no sound. And it'll be all eerily quiet. I mean, there might be a couple of drunken yobs discussing things, but sometimes it can be very quiet.
And that's a good idea.
And a bit of a humiliating event.
Loud music
happen.
In the lavs.
Yeah, to cover up events.
Yeah. Here are some that have come in from listeners. Tom says, I suggest no wearing of band merchandise while actually at the gig. It really annoys me when people wear a T-shirt of the band who are playing as if they're trying to stake their claim for the band and make sure that everyone else knows they're the biggest fan.
It does seem a bit redundant to actually wear the shirt at the gig.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Doesn't it make you just a super fan?
I suppose it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I wouldn't get annoyed about it.
Well, Tom's annoyed.
Tom's furious.
Tom, I think that's a good suggestion.
Yeah, you reckon?
Yeah, I think the point of this manifesto is just to be a bit sort of...
fascistic.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Right.
Here's one from Amy in London. She says, my suggestion for gig etiquette would be no snogging. Or no over-the-top snogging, at least. There's nothing worse than getting stuck behind a couple really going for it. This happened to me at a Radiohead gig years ago and nearly ruined their rendition of Airbag. I like the fact that she says that you're allowed sort of snogging, but no over-the-top snogging. Because that gives the police something to do.
Heavy petting.
Yeah, they just watch. And then at a certain point, when things sort of step over a slightly nebulous line, prod. Bzz,
what's wrong with snogging? Come on.
You like it.
I like a bit of snogging.
You should move a little closer to the snogging.
Certainly.
Couple.
I'll try and get in there.
So your trousers are brushing the lady.
I'll try and squeeze between them and get a snog myself.
Pop your tongue in just in case they don't notice. Hang on a second.
You went too far.
Why?
I wouldn't do that. Because you're suggesting I would go in and pop my tongue into someone else's mouth while they were snogging.
Well, we've heard about your toothbrush activities. We know your oral hygiene standards are low.
Yeah, well.
Ash from South Pems says, big fat hairy blokes must remain fully clothed at all times.
That's a very good... I mean, that's a good rule just for life in general, when it gets hot and stuff, you know?
Melanie in Stretford says, hi, Adam and Joe, I think no ponytails allowed worn high on the head at gigs, therefore no flicking it in the face of the person behind.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of these just have to do with being in a crowd.
Well, exactly. If you're going to stand in the mosh pit, you take your chances, you know what I mean? You can't legislate for that. I think that's an area within the mosh pit area. Maybe there should be clearer definitions for where that area is. There should be a zone, a mosh zone. When you go into the mosh zone, you are not covered by any of the regulations. It's a little demilitarized zone and you can just go nuts. And you can break all of these rules.
That's a good idea.
But outside the mosh zone, you will obey the manifesto.
Hello, this is Jack Johnson, and you're listening to, I don't know. No, I'm sorry, I don't know. Sorry.
Last week, I told a story about finding a wallet, one of many stories that I've told on this program, which was not supported by Joe Cornish. But we've had a follow-up email about it, and it says, Dear Adam and Joe, this is from Raina Simpson. Raina, thank you for your email. He says, Adam's exhilarating story, he describes it as exhilarating, about finding a wallet spurred me to get in touch with my own. I work at a well-known university in London. You might be able to tell by my email address. And recently I found a wallet stuffed full with £950 in 50 quid notes with absolutely no identification whatsoever. As this was more money than I've ever seen in one place in my life, I briefly enjoyed pretending it was my money by locking myself in my office and throwing it in the air while I rolled around the floor giggling.
Bet that's not true.
I bet it is true. I then returned the money to the wallet and handed it in to our building manager like the model employee I am. To my knowledge, no one has come forward to ask if the money has been found, adding credibility to my theory that I inadvertently scuppered a drug deal. Love the show, by the way, says Raina Simpson. I mean, don't
what?
Look, come in.
I'm laughing with
while
joy
I was
at the
reading
email.
That out.
It's a funny email.
You should have been thinking of things to rejoin with about it.
I was, but you know what? I couldn't think of anything.
That's not good enough.
It's not good enough, is it? Shall I go
and
on
instead,
holiday with Ben?
I finish reading the email. I look at you. You've got a stupid grin on your face.
I'm just suggesting that the only reason you read that email out is because...
He described my story as exhilarating.
Exactly.
Correct.
The rest of it, I think, was just filler.
No, it not what... Not, no, no. No, not.
I mean, what?
No.
He found the wallet, had £950 in it.
Amazing.
He threw it in the air, rolled in it, which I think is probably an
amazing
exaggeration.
Amazing thing number two, not an exaggeration. Real, why would he lie?
End of the story. What's the end of the story?
He scuppered a drug deal. Amazing thing number three. That's three amazing things in one story. And all
has he got any evidence for the drug deal?
All you've got is a stupid grin.
Does he know he scuppered his
deal? No, but he.
It's, he's just a man. It's fantasy. It's pure fantasy.
No one came forward to ask for the money. That added credibility to his theory.
The facts of the matter are the following. He found a wallet with £950 in it, which I agree is impressive. The end.
No, not the end.
Did he hand it back?
The money rolling. Yes, he handed it back. Were you even listening?
No, I tuned out by that point.
Clearly you tuned out. Listeners, if you think it's disgraceful the way that Joe treats my interesting stories, not only my interesting stories, but the interesting stories of fellow listeners, then can we get some kind of petition going? No, I'm not serious about that. Don't worry about the petition. But I think, Raina, thank you. That was an interesting email, and I am so sorry. I'm so very sorry about the behaviour of my so-called colleague here at the programme with his silly grin. All right? Look at him.
They can't see my silly grin.
Can't they?
No.
Well, you can imagine it, though.
You can hear it, almost.
Text the nation. Text, text, text. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
It doesn't matter. Text.
Now, Text the Nation this week, listeners, is all about building up a manifesto for gig etiquette, behaviour that we think should be enforced at live music venues in order to enhance the pleasure of everybody there. We've sort of neglected collecting our points, haven't we? We forgot to actually sort of write them down and, and put them in an order.
Things that we agreed on. We agreed on having, a demilitarised mosh zone.
That's right. So order of height we had.
Yeah.
So you have to tell them your height when you buy your ticket and you get positioned in the auditorium depending on your height. This eliminates the problem of having your view obscured by tall people.
Height declaration.
We had a separate area for either that or a separate area for short people with some straw in it.
Yeah. An enclosure.
Yeah, with an electric fence and some straw.
Why do they need straw?
It's a bit dehumanising, isn't it? Is it?
On behalf of short people, I don't understand why it's implied that we need straw.
Just to keep the floor clean.
What are we going to do? We're just going to soil ourselves because we're short.
I don't know. And what else did we have?
Loud music in lavatories to cover airborne toxic event embarrassment.
Yeah. We're not saying that all these make the manifesto. We're going to have to whittle them down to the best ones at the end.
I tell you a good one was the decibel level. The bands have to declare if it's going to be allowed.
Right, decibel level, so you can gauge whether you're allowed to talk or not during the concert. Quiet bands, no talking.
No talking.
Also, lids on beers.
Lids on
beers. I mean, do they not serve cans anymore at these places?
Some, well,
cans are good because you can't really spill a can, can you? But then I suppose you can lob, health and safety reasons, maybe you can lob them and they're dangerous.
Well, if you compacted the can and
becomes
then
a missile.
Becomes a dangerous missile.
Yeah, so there's a bit of a conflict there, isn't there? We want unspillable beer somehow. I got beer spilt all the way down my back at the Fleet Foxes gig.
You don't even like beer.
I don't really. Why? Are you suggesting I would have sucked it out of my trousers?
That's what we beer fans
do. That's what most people do.
Yeah, we like it.
Literally early in the gig, it was like I weed myself for the rest of the gig.
Sometimes I deliberately try and get someone to spill beer on me so I can get free beer.
Really?
Yeah, and I suck it out of my sweater.
Wow, you're like Homer Simpson from The Simpsons. Have you seen that program?
I have, yeah.
It's brilliant. It's only on Sky.
You know, I saw an amazing thing the other day at a gig. A beautiful woman. Have I told you this already?
Possibly.
She was drinking a bottle of beer and she reached back to scratch the back of her head and she just tipped the whole bottle of beer down her back, but she didn't notice and it just cascaded down her beautiful lady ponytail down the back of her lovely dress.
Wow.
She had no clue about it, and I didn't think it was appropriate to let her know because I thought maybe she would be embarrassed, you know what I mean?
That's a good idea for a spread in Men's Mag. Just beer all over ladies.
That is a very good idea.
You'd like that.
I mean, that's a good idea for a whole magazine.
Beery ladies.
Beery birds.
Beer birds magazine. This week, Jenny's pulled a bottle of Carling over her knees.
Tamsin spilt some stout on her face.
Read more.
Double
pages 8 to 60. Listen, as usual, we've just ranted on about our own things rather than reading text. So here are some listener suggestions for our gig behaviour manifesto. This is from Catherine in Newcastle. When a man, it's always a man, stands right in front of you and half headbangs i.e. just enough to make you flinch every time his head nears your nose every few seconds. This is another symptom of being in a compacted crowd of people, and any kind of head movement can threaten to nut the person behind.
Well, he should be in the demilitarized zone.
What about neck braces?
Neck braces to stop people doing that.
Just issue to everybody.
Is that not a bit impractical?
Expensive as well.
It's very expensive.
How would you stop that then?
Well, you just zap them.
It's a health and safety risk.
No, if you see that kind of nodding, then the pigeon detectives go around.
Are we saying heads have to be held still?
Mm-hmm.
That's a bit extreme, isn't it? Put it on the list. We'll whittle them down later. Here's one from Ali in Southport. As I've had many gigs ruined by people with bad body odour, perhaps a deodorant monitor or a pit sniffer should be employed to weed out the smellies. No deodorant, no entry to the gig. That seems quite fascistic as well.
Deodorant monitor. I've never been bothered by someone smelling
that. Neither have I, actually. Gigs are supposed to stink, aren't they?
I mean, the thing is that nowadays, since the smoking ban, gigs smell different. They smell more of beer, which is a bit unpleasant. In the olden days, everything just smelled like
ciggies. Yeah, there's more sort of nuances of scent, aren't there?
Yeah.
Everything just used to be stinky cigs.
That's right, which used to cover up the smelly armpits and stuff like that.
Maybe it depends on the gig. Again, like a Fleet Foxes gig, you don't get a lot of hands being waved in the air. But if the arms are generally up, then I can see that it would be more of a problem. In a big crowd and people are waving, then you're going to get armpits in close proximity. Proximity to your nose.
And proximity as well.
Mm-hmm. Is that a word?
It is now.
Here's one more from Simon in Bath. He says, do not cheer at the sudden, but admittedly exciting presence of roadies doing their job before the band comes on.
Yeah.
Anyone who is able to confuse an aging bearded noddy holder lookalike with the youthful sprites of today's modern bands should be removed immediately.
But people are cheering because the appearance of the roadies means the band's set beginning.
Sometimes it's ironic, sometimes it's a genuine mistake, and sometimes it's just a anticipatory excitement.
Right.
But Simon's not having it.
No cheering at the roadies.
This podcast comes from a corner of the BBC that you can listen to if you have got a DAB. It is called Six Music,
the secret station.
Adam, I went to buy some bread during the week, right?
Yeah.
And I went to a lovely little sort of delicatessen near the Oval Tube.
What kind of bread are you after there?
Sort of rough-hewn, organic, properly baked loaf. You know, proper,
unsliced.
Proper tasty, proper bread.
Peasant bread. You can rip off hunks of it with your wine. Yeah.
So I went into the deli, but the deli was empty. There was nobody there. Instead, there was a sort of a customer person who said, oh, don't worry, mate, the Kev, or whatever the shopkeeper's name was, he's just busy at the moment, he'll be back in a second, I'll give him a shout for you. Kev, hello, he's going to be up in a minute, don't worry, he'll be up in a minute, I'll give him a shout. Kev, some customer, want some bread? Yeah, I'll be back in a minute. So anyway, I waited possibly about 4 minutes.
Right.
And then the owner of the deli, nice man with a moustache.
Kev
came up from downstairs looking very sheepish, buttoning up his trousers.
What?
And he said, hello, sorry about that. And he quickly went over to a sink and he washed his hands. He sort of ran them under the tap.
Yeah.
And then said, what can I do for you? I said, I'd like that loaf of bread, please. Now, I was already thinking at this point, what was he doing?
Well, he went to the lab, didn't he?
Yeah, but it was too long for a number one.
Well, it was number twos then.
Yeah. So he served me the bread. And I popped it. It was unwrapped.
Yeah.
With his bare hands, he picked the loaf up and popped it in a bag and gave it to me.
Right.
I took the loaf home. Yum, 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 yummy, yummy, yum loaf. Put it on the side of the kitchen sideboard. And I decided to tell my lovely girlfriend partner the story about what had happened before the purchase of the bread. She wouldn't touch the bread. She refused to eat the bread because she called it pooey bread. She said, I'm not having any of the pooey bread.
Poodo.
And, you know, then I went off the bread.
Right.
The poodo. I went right off it. I wouldn't have it. So for a few days, the loaf just sat there because we thought it might have pooey fingerprints on it. But then midweek, we capitulated. And my girlfriend said, oh, I had a slice of the pooey bread. It was delicious.
You know what I would have done?
What?
Toasted it.
Really?
That gets rid of any of that kind of
really?
Stuff.
Doesn't it just enhance the flavour?
No, that'll get rid of you. I mean, because the thing is, even if you've got really, in our house, right, what we do is if the bread's really mouldy and there's all cultures and stuff on it, just toast that stuff.
Really?
And you can't
kill
tell.
It.
Yeah, you just toast it all up. It's nice.
You've got a weird sort of a Texas Chainsaw kind of a house.
Yeah.
With the shared toothbrush,
mm-hmm.
the mouldy bread being toasted. Are you okay?
It's family life for you. It's good. You get a bit of free penicillin.
Do you think we were wrong there about the bread? Would you have eaten that bread?
Certainly. Would have.
You would have tucked into it with extra relish.
Absolutely tucked in, yeah. Mm. Thinking, you know what? It tastes better.
It was the look on his face.
Of shame.
Yeah. He knew he'd done one. I knew he'd done one.
I'm surprised he didn't make more of a show of using the hand sanitizer.
Well, that would have made it explicit that he'd just wiped his bottom.
If he'd scrubbed up like a surgeon, you know?
Yeah. All right, what can I do for you?
Okay, absolutely sanitized now. Absolutely no poo anywhere on my hands, if that's what you're worried about.
That's how he talks as well. Yeah.
Like
he's
Mario.
Italian.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the
Princess Peach.
I come for you.
Someone here.
Oh, dear, I've fallen down chimney. Oh, but look, I found a lot of coins.
A lot of coins.
Bonus. Where's this going?
I have no idea.
Anyway, that's my pooey bread story. But good one, huh? Better than your wallet story.
Only because I supported it. If that had been me telling that story, you would have been sat there going...
That story's a freestanding story. Standalone story. Great story. Beginning, middle and end. Punchy. Right. What a story.
Do you know what?
That's a Sony award-winning story.
Incidentally, all the laughter that I generated throughout that story, fake.
Genuine.
All fake.
Genuine.
It was all fake.
Genuine.
Fake laughter.
Ah, yeah. A little groovy break. Now back to work.
It's very exciting, isn't it, this week, because Michael Jackson's back.
He's back.
Jacko's backo.
And he is looking amazing. He's had a new lady's haircut.
Very macho.
And he's had a lovely old lady's hair piece there attached to his head.
Did you see the press conference?
Yes, absolutely.
Apparently, they filmed it themselves and then issued the film to the media outlets. Is that not true? Someone correct me if I'm wrong, but certainly the BBC report on BBC TV suggested, or the reporter noted, mm-hmm. that this footage was taken by Jackson's people, not the BBC.
Uh-huh.
So I think it was a very carefully stage-managed event to make sure that no one said anything untoward and to present... You know, a sort of appearance of Jacko being absolutely at his best, loads of fans, lots of excitement, complete non-ambiguous comeback for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But has he, I mean, what is he, 51 now?
50.
50.
Mm.
I mean, surely he's just going to break, isn't he?
No, man, he's a lot younger. Look, Clunk Eastwood, how old's he? 78 and he's making Gran Torino. 50, you're a spring chicken at 50 these days. Yeah. People are going to be living to 150 pretty soon.
That's true, isn't
50s,
it?
Adolescence. He's going to be amazing. I saw Jacko live, but just I think the week after the first scandal broke, when he was at Wembley, and it was very, very soon after the scandal had emerged, and he did that thing where he comes on stage and he holds a pose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the first time you've seen him. Oh, my God, there he is. He's got his hand in the air and his legs wide apart, and he's looking super cool, and he holds that pose for the length of time that the crowd usually cheer.
Right.
Which up until that point had been longer than any other pop star in the world could possibly hold a static pose.
Uh-huh.
6 minutes, 5 minutes.
Wow.
It's exaggerating, probably. But you know what I mean? Yeah. A ridiculous amount of time.
Yeah.
In this concert, people stopped cheering after about 40 seconds.
Right.
But he kept the pose. He held the pose.
Hoping that they might start
again.
Yeah,
so there was about 2 minutes of silence before he went, woo, chicka-chicka, ooh, and it started. And then he flew off at the end in a spaceship.
Yes. Like, take that.
Yes, and a big tank came out and it was going to shoot the crowd, but he put a flower in the end and it didn't.
No, did
and
he?
And lots of children in rags came up and...
Is that really true?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a heck of a stage show. And I got free tickets off of the producer of the Adam and Joe Show at the time.
Yeah.
So I thought I should see him. I thought this might be the end.
Sure.
To see him live.
So
he
this
was amazing.
What, like 15 years ago, 10 years ago?
He can lean forward further than any other human being.
Right.
Mm.
Well, he's got big clown shoes.
Exactly, with extended toes.
Yeah.
So he's got increased leverage.
That's right. That's
the secret. Yeah. Anyway, listen, are you going to go and see him?
Wackles, no.
If you were offered free tickets to the Wackles comeback gig, no, why not?
Why? What would be the point?
Because he's an amazing megastar. It's like seeing Howard Hughes live or something.
No, I'm not interested.
Really?
I'm interested in his clown shoes. If you lean forward...
He
right
will do
forward,
the leaning forward.
If you could touch his little weird nose...
Against the floor and then stand
the
back up again.
And then pop back up. That I
he'll,
would
he'll arrange
see.
That.
Yeah, I'd love to see that.
Text the nation. Text, text, text. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
It doesn't matter. Text.
Text the Nation this week is all about gig etiquette. We're trying to draw up a manifesto for behaviour at gigs to improve the experience for everybody. How many points have we got so far?
Well, I would say around six good ones. But rather than finalise the list on air today. What we're going to do is leave it open so that you can continue sending ideas in throughout the week, and then we'll finalise it for next week's podcast.
Yeah, on Retro Text the Nation in next week's podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't listen to the podcast, Retro Text the Nation is an exciting opportunity for people to contribute to the Text the Nation theme during the week after the show. Does that make any sense? That then gets read out in the next podcast.
Beautifully explained.
Thank you. So here are some more suggestions for gig etiquette. This is from Chris in Norwich, and he suggests an entrance examination. Now, this is a good idea that someone else has suggested as well. An entrance examination to ensure that only interested people get inside.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get these sort of touristy, casual people dipping into concerts who then don't really listen or chat or text their friends or only recognise their hits.
Right.
Stuff like that. Isn't that quite annoying?
That's very annoying. I wonder who those people are, though. I don't understand the mindset of someone who actually go out and buy a ticket. Maybe they're people who haven't actually purchased their tickets.
Yeah, or the friend's got a spare ticket or something.
Right.
But what do you think about that? An actual little exam. So you're asked a sort of random quiz question about the band, and if you get it wrong, no entry.
Uh-huh. But then it's difficult because you need the casual viewers to come along sometimes in order to be converted and then spread the word.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
No.
Getting rid
of much, much more ruthless business now.
Okay. I like the exam.
Let's pop that on the manifesto there.
Yep.
Here's another one from Julian in Notts. He says, here's another gig suggestion. People who throw empty stroke, half-empty plastic glasses should be forced to stay behind and do the cleaning up. So, yes, you can throw things. That's fine. Be silly if you want, but you will clear them up afterwards.
We're turning the gig-going experience into something really very restrictive. And pathetic.
It's the idea, isn't it?
Yes. So if you're found littering...
Yeah, that's the whole THX1138 thing. It's a sort of future world.
You! Orange hair! Silly T-shirt!
Citizen 749, stay behind for cleaning up cups. You were seen throwing a cup at the bass player of the Fleet Foxes. You must stay behind and clean up all the cups.
Violated
now.
Manifesto Code 7! Stay behind!
You have your entrance exam was below par.
Fail.
You will not be allowed into
Accent.
The gig. Very good.
Okay, here's a good one. This is Emily in Limehouse. At the start of a gig, when fans are being led into the venue, there should only be one door opened. When I go to gigs, I often queue for hours to ensure I get a good spot on the barrier. There's nothing worse than another door or gate being opened first, so people who arrive later get in earlier. So unfair!
Mm.
So basically, your position on the floor is linked to how early you turn up.
Yeah, it would take a lot longer to get everybody in, of course.
Well, you know. Great pains, great gains. Is that an expression? No, I just made it up.
Great pains, great gains. From
Silence.
Sage Guru Cornish.
This is from Lee. He says, I think all venues should have circles painted on the floor in which you must stand alone. In the circle.
Why?
There is a stand which holds headphones and a graphic equalizer so you can experience perfect sound to your liking and a drink holder. It also has nodes. I don't know what nodes are, but it must have them. So the other thing you could do, Lee, is remove the band and stay at home.
Yeah. Well, no, what he's talking about doing his own personal sound mix on the audio.
Yeah. That's quite a good idea, though.
That
it's a bit like, you know, in Disneyland, the 360-degree cinema, where they have to have rails in case you get dizzy and fall over?
Sure.
It's a bit like that. Or someone else suggested lecterns.
Yeah.
Like,
what are you doing with the lecterns?
Well, everyone has a lectern, so you've got something to lean on. It would have a cup holder,
right.
And you'd have your graphic equalizer there as well.
Oh my goodness.
And that's the end of this week's podcast. Now here's a goodbye link.
Thank you. You've been wonderful. Throw me your dirty pants. I'll wash them and get them back to you. Thank you.
There you go. That was quite a sort of roughy-tufty, confusing up and down of a show.
It was exciting stuff. We're going to keep these intro and outro links short because we're giving all the time to Retro Text the Nation in the middle of the podcast. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, indeed. Wow, that was very abrupt, though.
Well, that's what I said.
You just walked away from it, though.
As advertised.
You just spun around on your heels and just dropped the whole thing.
I showed it in my bottom.
Ooh, steely. Have a good week, listeners.
Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed the Adam and Joe podcast, then why not try the John Richardson podcast? Download it now. bbc.co.uk/6music.
Thank you very much for all your texts and emails. As usual, a sincere apologies to the people who emailed in and didn't get read out, including Jimmy in Durham. Thanks for your message, but there's just no time. It's
what did Jimmy
impossible.
In Durham
he was complaining
do?
That he emails us all the time and we never read him out.
Well, now you've encouraged him.
Yeah, well, you know, he gets a little nod. He gets a shout out.
For complaining?
Yeah.
Is that something we want to encourage?
Well, no, you've made it look like it's for complaining. You were the one that brought that. I was just giving Jimmy a shout out. Mm. And you've turned it into like something different, yeah. Which you do a lot throughout this show, I notice.